The John Gambling Show with special co-host Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
We need to end the gridlock and to stop passing the buck to future generations.
Mayor Michael Bloomberg on the John Gambling Show.
We, the individual voters, have to do something different. We have to hold those we elected accountable.
Now, with New York's only local news talk morning radio program, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
It is a Friday, the Friday before Christmas, 9 minutes after 8 o'clock. Mr. Mayor, welcome aboard and good morning.
Welcome, and the story du jour, or du hoy, is the
weather.
The weather, right.
You don't like snow. You're a snow hater.
Well, no, I love snow.
But it costs you money all the time.
I'd like it outside, in the parks would be great, and on the slopes, but not on the streets.
We have the sanitation commissioner on the line here,
John
Doherty.
We better have the sanitation commissioner on the line rather than here, because I want him out working, cleaning our streets, which have yet to have snow on them, but getting ready. If he were here, he wouldn't be doing it.
Good morning,
John, there.
Good morning, John. I'm here. Yes, good morning.
This is John Doherty, our sanitation commissioner.
Yeah, so I understand that you have been out looking at things, and how's the pile of salt? Everything okay?
We have plenty of salt. There's no fear about that. We're ready to go. Our soil spreaders are loaded. Some of them are out at the starting points already, and the plows are waiting to go out and as soon as they need to go.
John, we tell the people how we make estimates as to the amount of snow we're going to get.
Well, we're basing it on the three weather forecasters that we have, and it's varying from 2 to 4 inches. One of them is telling us that the Bronx and the northern part of Manhattan could possibly get 4 inches of snow. I think the concern today will be the rain in the middle of the day, and then when it turns back to snow later, and tonight as the temperature drops and freezes, it's going to be, you know, some serious road conditions out there. We will be out all day salting and plowing if need be, and through the night. We're in 12-hour shifts. They'll be working overtime, and we're ready.
John, let me ask you this question. Do you use salt or some other chemicals?
No, we use salt, and then we use a liquid calcium chloride with it, which helps when you have low temperatures to give you a faster reaction for melting the ice on a roadway.
Because traveling from Nassau County, I hit the New York line, and I will tell you that the New York roads are always better than others.
Well, thank you very much.
Could you say that one more time?
The New York roads are generally better than
others.
Good. Right. and you've got everybody ready to go.
We're ready to go. Yeah.
All right, good. Well, we'll have to wait and see how it is. John, thanks a lot.
John, I will touch base with you in an hour or so.
You got it, boss.
Goodbye.
There's John Doherty, sanitation commissioner, as you just heard, all set, ready and raring to go.
You know, snow, and they always joke it costs $1 million an inch. But that's only if you over a long period of time. And if you get small snowstorms, it doesn't really cost that much. It's when you get a big one that you got to really keep plowing for a long time. But the real cost of all of this is when you have to run your plows because they dig up the streets, and then fixing the streets is, you know, a nightmare. Last couple of years, we've been lucky. We've had under forecast, under budget snow, and we've not had to spend $1 million an inch.
That leftover money, what happens to the leftover money?
Long gone, John.
Gone. It never sits in the sanitation budget.
Well, I mean, given we have, you know, billions of dollars of deficit, think about how many inches you would have to forego to pay for that. We don't get that kind of snow.
All right, where do we start? I guess maybe on the property tax deal that you and the city council have put together.
Nobody likes taxes. Not good for the economy, not good for anybody. But we have 300,000 employees, and while we'll try to do more with less and downsize through attrition, hopefully not more, but whatever we have to do to balance the budget, we will. But they have to get paid. And our property taxes, if you remember, we reduced it a year and a half ago by 7% because we were doing well, the economy was booming, and said we'd be okay for a year and maybe 2 years. Here we are in the maybe year, the second year. In the beginning of the year, I said we'll try to keep it if we can do it, but it looks like we really can't afford to do it. So we were going to... Excuse me.
Working a cold.
I am working on a cold. We were going to raise it in June anyways. Now, by doing it 6 months early, it gives us roughly $600 million towards our deficit. We're also, the good news is, however, going to send out the rebate checks. Now, we won't do it next year, I'm sure. We just won't have the money to do that. But for this year, we will. The checks go in the mail. You should be getting them between Christmas and New Year's. If you don't get them until right after the first of the year, don't panic. I wouldn't worry about it until I was a week or two into January. And then if you didn't get it, you have to call. Although we have this down to a pretty good system, I think. And that will wipe out the extra 7% for most people for this coming 6 months. But after that, you know, we have to, if we want the services, we got to pay for them. There are no plans whatsoever to raise the property tax again more than what it is next June. The part of that budget will just continue at these rates. I can't guarantee that the state isn't going to raise other taxes or that we won't raise other taxes. We're going to have to see.
Absolutely. Now, I understand that next year, the 7% increase, if I have my numbers right, I didn't write them down, but $540 million somewhere.
$1.2 billion per year, so $600 for half a year.
Okay, so you've got $1.2 billion for the following year. Why did you decide to put the cops back in the training, which you've taken out?
Well, it's, number one,
not a bad thing, but,
you know, whether it's really needed or not, I don't know. People are very concerned that crime might go up. I do not think so. I think that we can do more with less. Our police department is exceptionally well run. Ray Kelly, you know, obviously fights for his department, but he really is very smart in terms of doing more with less. And the police department, you can't have an infinitely large police department. When we came into office, we downsized the size of the police department by 3,000 cops, and crime has come down every single year since, 7 years in a row. This year it's going to be down another record. Murders, I'll be up a touch. It'll be the second best year. I don't think we're close to having another record, but probably not going to make it. So it'll be the second best year in history. And if we had fewer cops, I think we could keep doing this. But the public is very worried about it, so I thought it made some sense to have another class. Keep in mind, the total size of the department is going to shrink because a class of 250 now, 250 for the second class is a lot less than the 1,200 each time that we would have had if
we
had more money.
Retire and
yeah, I do not think that there's not a lot of correlation. Conventional wisdom is when the economy softens, crime goes up. It's like, you know, when the weather is bad, the bad guys stay indoors. And if you look at all of these things, there's not a lot of evidence that that is really the way it works. I am confident that we can keep, and I can tell you, if we aren't doing it, we will spend more money. We'll do anything we can, anything we have to do to keep crime down. We're going to do everything we have to do to keep the streets clean and to keep you safe in your home with the fire department. But we can't put a firehouse in every street. We can't pick up the garbage every single day. We can't have a cop on every corner. We have to sit there and say, okay, there is a cost, and you have to make decisions. And then somebody said to me, an elected official, oh, my God, we can't do anything. Supposing there is a murder. Well, there's going to be a murder. And that's what leadership is, to say it's going to happen. You can't ever be 100% safe. But I think that the record that the NYPD has in terms of bringing down crime, or the FDNY in terms of saving lives, or the sanitation department, they will continue to do that. And I'm going to have to find ways where they can do it for less money, because we just don't have the money. Corrections is slightly different because we are in the court order to have X number of guards per prisoner, and so we just
wiggle room there. Not much.
Well, if you think about it, some of these things, there isn't a wiggle room. You can't have much wiggle room in corrections, even in sanitation. We can pick up the garbage instead of twice a week, once a week, but it's the same amount of garbage, so you'd have to have double the number of trucks on the road once a week to... And so there's a lot of these things. People say, well, cut out the needless stuff. I'd be happy to do that. Just tell me what is needless and get everybody else to agree. Can't hurt seniors, can't hurt juniors, can't hurt those in the middle. But we have no choice. And I think the governor's been acting very responsibly. People are screaming about his budget. They don't want taxes. They don't want cuts. That's fine. The governor's at least come up with something. MTA. Got to do something. I'm waiting for the legislature to tell us what they're willing to do. We had a plan. They didn't want it. Okay. Ravitz came up with some suggestions. Great. come up with something, you in the legislature. And in the meantime, yesterday, the MTA did pass a budget which calls for draconian increases.
Cutting back of service.
But no money for capital still. And, you know, now the legislature's got to do something.
Let's talk about the state budget in just a moment when we come back here on the John Gambling Show on a Friday with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. We will be asking you to ask the questions before we finish up. You might want to get in line right now. 800-321-0710. 800-321-0710. We're coming right back. All right, we continue 23 minutes now after 8 o'clock with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Well, we always seem to end up talking about money, especially in these times here. You mentioned the governor's budget that was announced this week. One of the things that was instrumental, and I think probably as strong a statement being made not only by the governor but by yourself, is the change of work rules in pensions and retirement criteria.
Number one, people sort of have a misunderstanding of what you can do. Current municipal workers, you can't change their pension benefits whatsoever. That's in the law, state law. Once they get a benefit, even the state legislature that gives them the benefit can't take it away. And so what you're talking about when you want talk about pension reform is new employees, people who have yet to be hired. Now, keep in mind, since we're not hiring a lot of people, if anything, we'd go in the other direction.
Impact
benefits,
will be minimal.
But long term, if you don't do it now, you'll never do it. So, you know, the benefits will be way down the road. Second thing is that the benefits that our municipal workers get are very different than the benefits that most get in the private sector, if they have benefits. A lot of jobs don't have pension funds and health care. Here they have great plans, and one of the things that makes working for the city an attractive job, and I don't begrudge them that, that's fine. But they have what's called a defined benefit plan, where no matter what it costs, the city has to put money in. And that's exactly what brought Detroit to its knees. That's exactly what brought the airlines to its knees. A defined contribution plan, the risk is really on the person getting the benefits. If services cost more, they get the same dollars, they just can't get as much service. Here they get the same benefits, but the employer has to put in more money if the cost of benefits go up. And the proposals are for not 20 years and you can retire, but 25 years or more. Somebody can join the police department, fire department at age 20, and at age 40, retire and have a pretty fancy benefits for the rest of their lives and take another job.
And get a pension for that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't begrudge the people that have it. They negotiated it. Actually, they didn't negotiate it. They convinced the state legislature to give it to them generally. There are a few exceptions. And the city has to pay. But regardless of how you got it, that's fine. That's what they've got. We should live with that commitment. Don't have any choice anyways. But we should try to change for have what they call a fifth tier. There are four already with different benefits. This would be a fifth one with less benefits. You'd have to work longer before you could retire. Maybe a copay, maybe a defined contribution.
This is what's being done in all the private sector.
Well, that's the thing, that you don't have a lot of sympathy among the general public for municipal workers because they're getting laid off, and municipal workers, we may get there, but hopefully not. And in the private sector, you have pension funds that keep cutting back, asking more copay and that sort of thing. The governor proposed benefit changes at our request. We put it in the law. He's proposed it for state employees, but not for uniform services. If you don't do the uniform services, that's where the big expense is. And their benefits are better than the non-uniform services, traditionally just always been in this city. And so that's where you have to go and make the changes. The way he did put it into his budget, it would require our city council to vote to reduce the benefits and the state legislature. Those are kind of poison pills that I'm not sure.
That's a big mountain to climb.
Yeah, it's maybe straight up a cliff. But regardless, we have to do it. And you did see yesterday, 33 out of 51, I think that was the number, city council people stood up and voted, not an easy vote, voted to raise taxes. Those that didn't, are really trying to slap our uniformed services and other city employees in the face. They sit there and they say, I want more cops. I want our cops to get better paid. And then they don't vote for them. They say, oh, we'll cut services. But there's no service that their constituents don't get that you can cut. And it's just gutless if you really want to know. But Christine Quinn, to her credit, Speaker of the City Council and 32 others with her, voted to do what's responsible. If we want services, we've got to pay for them. Now, we can always do a little bit better, and we're doing it that. We've asked every agency to cut 2.5% for this next 6 months and for 5% for the year afterwards, plus maybe another 7% on top of that for the year afterwards. So we're doing what we can. But fundamentally, city government is the economics of it, you collect taxes and you pay salaries. Most of the money we spend is in salaries. And if you want to pay more or you want to have the same number of people, somebody's got to pay. And these people who just didn't have any courage, hopefully the people will come to understand that's not good government and they shouldn't be there.
The biggest part of the governor's proposed budget is a reduction by $9 billion in education distribution money and also in Medicaid money. That might be good that the state doesn't spend $9 billion to reduce the budget, but those costs are all still there.
Well, or you stop doing things. Medicaid, if the government pays less, we can't pick up the whole cost of Medicaid. Right now, Medicaid's actually a pretty good deal for us because the state pays 25 cents on the dollar. The federal government pays 75 cents on the dollar. We only pay 25 cents on the dollar. If Medicaid isn't there and somebody shows up at one of our public hospitals, we have to pay 100 cents on the dollar. So you got to be very careful in terms of cutting back, its impact on the economy, its impact on services. But I'll come back to defending the governor in the following ways. You might not like what he proposed, and nobody wants to cut Medicaid. It's for people who really are up against it, don't have a lot of money. Nobody wants to cut education aid. The next cuts from the governor are going to come in the classroom. There's nothing outside of the classroom. Nobody should make any mistake about that. $1 billion is roughly 12,000 cops or 12,000 teachers, and the governor's budget hits us to the tune of roughly $1 billion. It's really $1.2 billion or $1.3 billion, but then there's some ways he lets us tax ourselves. Thank you very much. Yeah, but the net cost is going to be $1 billion. If you don't like the governor's budget, just come up with a better idea. And everybody sits there and complains. Oh, let's cut out waste. I don't know how to break this to you. There isn't a lot of waste.
Are you saying that you're going to have to cut 12,000 teachers?
No, I didn't say that. I said we have another $1 billion hole in our budget, and I'm going to have to figure out what to do. But anybody that thinks that we can continue to provide the same amount of services with the same amount of local taxes if we get $1 billion less from Albany just to smoke and they're either they're not very smart or they're totally disingenuous. These are real serious things. If you take a look at what's happening in the economy, restaurants, last night I was in a restaurant, half full. I talked to somebody yesterday that owns a very big hotel here, very low reservations for January. I had dinner, I went to a Christmas party for retail workers in all the big department stores. The unions have been notified that right after the first year there will be massive layoffs. Because there's just nobody going into the stores. And all of that filters right through to our tax base. And then the people say, well, I don't believe it until I see the taxes go down. You don't have to wait. Just take a look. There's no economic activity. There's not going to be any. It's like Wall Street. I don't have to wait to see them reduce their taxes. They've lost money. They're not going to pay any.
Yeah, I was reading, too, that a lot of these retailers have so much inventory, they're just going to start to cut the prices even further and further this week.
I was at Modell's last Saturday buying some toys for sneakers and clothes for a 7-year-old and a 3-year-old. They write letters to Santa, some come to the mayor. And everything in the store, 50 to 75% off.
Amazing.
And this is 3 weeks before Christmas.
I understand this last week it's going to be even more. Hang on, Mr. Mayor. We got lots to talk about, and we'll be looking for your calls, too, 800-321-0710. 832 is our time. Let's go to Joe Bartlett. We're back 20 minutes before 9 o'clock on the Friday before Christmas. Mayor Michael Bloomberg is here. Snowstorm in the air, and we talked about that already. I have to pass along a question from one of the audience and one of your constituents.
Okay.
It is one of the gambling boys who lives here in New York City.
Right.
He said, Dad, you got to ask the mayor. He goes, with all these new taxes coming down out of Albany, which are not your fault, but they're coming down. He goes, I'm just about at the edge of having to make a decision about staying or going.
Well, here's the good news. Wherever he wants to go, they got the same problems, maybe worse. I mean, the bottom line is this country and a lot big chunk of the world, not everybody, a big chunk of the world, have been living beyond their means for a long time. I don't mean to make light of it. Nobody's happy about it, particularly me. But the truth of the matter is we have for, you know, a number of years enjoyed stock market going up, which helped our 401ks and our pension funds. Even people didn't look and say, I'm in the stock market. They are in the stock market because their employers are part of that world. And we took mortgages at very attractive rates and never thought that they'd ever go, the costs would ever go up. We work for companies that we always thought were going to keep growing. And that's just not the case. And now, having said all that, we've been talking doom and gloom since the beginning of the show. I think that there is reason to be optimistic as well. And that is that the city is in better shape than most other cities. We have taken a lot of steps to get ready for this, although you can never do enough. Nobody ever thought it would be this. And I think the beginning of next year, the next 6 months, is going to be very tough in the economy. It's going to be, we're going to be talking about this for a long time. But we are not walking away from keeping the streets safe and clean. We're not walking away from making the investments. So when we come out of this, and I don't know whether it's 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, but when we come out of it, and these things do go through cycles, we will be better off. We will come out stronger. Not to say there isn't going to be an awful lot of pain. And you and I have an obligation to help each other, to help our fellow New Yorkers. Not everybody is as lucky as we are. And no matter how bad it is, there's always somebody that's worse off. But, you know, we're going to have to tighten our belts. And if somebody said to me, well, what should I do? And I said, well, you should probably spend a little bit less. You know, make the car go one more year, make that, wear that dress one more year, whatever. Buy a cheaper bottle of wine. Go to a less fancy restaurant or whatever. Of course, if we all do that, we're going to create the recession
the
that we're worried
problem,
about.
Right.
So there's a balance. What we need is the banking system, I don't think, is the issue here. They have money. They're afraid to lend it. There's this crisis of confidence, whether it's bankers or you and me. People are worried. A small percentage of people will lose their houses, but a very small percentage. A small percentage of people will lose their jobs, but a very small percentage. Most people, it's the worry of it, not the fact. And so they're afraid to spend. The banks are afraid to lend.
All right, let's move along to some other things. This one, unfortunately, is not necessarily positive either. The finding innocent of Robert Ellis and the Timoshenko shooting.
You know, I said I shouldn't be out there criticizing a jury, but I will say that deep down inside, I just find it so hard to understand how they could come to that conclusion. We have somebody who is devoting their lives to keep all of us safe. He's dead. Nothing's going to bring him back. But if you can shoot a cop and get away with it, which in my heart of hearts, I think is what happened here, there's something really wrong. I don't know how the jurors managed to do that.
And it's got to obviously upset and worry those that do this for a living.
Absolutely. You know, we have lots of police officers out there on the streets. They're putting their lives on the line for us every day. And, you know, we have young men and women overseas fighting for us. We have cops, firefighters, lots of people with dangerous jobs here. You and I run away from danger. They run towards it. And they're just like you and I, however, in another ways. They have families. They want to go home to them.
Absolutely. So how's the financial hotline that you and some other organizations here in the city
They're getting
together?
An enormous number
until
of calls.
Gather, yeah.
Yeah, but when this is over, it's a week's thing, then just call 311. I mean, because the programs behind that we have, and they will keep going. We can't bail anybody out of their mortgage, but we can tell them where to go to get help. We can tell them, give them advice as to what their rights are and make sure they don't get caught up in scams and that sort of thing. Same thing with small businesses. There are companies and charities that will, nonprofits that will loan them money. There are employees who they're looking for who we can train or find for them. So we can do stuff without big expenses. I think one of the problems with government is we and Congress is the worst. They just have to write a big check. I think that if you want to help this country get infrastructure going, what you could do with relatively no cost is if you could open up the municipal bond market so that local municipalities could borrow. They would borrow, and they would go and create jobs because they would build the things that they need. You don't have to give them the money. They'll do it on their own. But it's not sexy. I don't know how you have a ribbon
cutting. It's not political.
There's,
there's nothing positive for the individual voting on.
That's right. But it would be, with very little money, a real boon.
There's lots of things, and maybe you've looked at these things in the New York City budget, but in the state budget as well, things that can be done away with. I was talking with E.J. McMahon from the Manhattan Institute, who I know you are aware of. He was saying, for example, a footbridge across the Hudson River in Poughkeepsie. This was only as an example. Those are the kind of things that would be nice, but we don't need to do. Is there much of that in the New York City budget, or not really?
There's, well, number one, the things that you think are nice but not necessary.
Oh.
There's somebody on the other side that thinks they're necessary.
Yeah, the other side of the Hudson River.
Right,
wants
that's
to get
exactly
to the other side.
Right. So, you know, it's a little bit. I mean, E.J. McMahon's a smart guy, relatively conservative, and a lot of times I read stuff, and he's right on a lot of things. I don't agree with him on everything. They tend to be very small things, the things that are nice but not necessary. For example, I'll give you a good example. You could say this city shouldn't be spending money in this period on advertising. We do. We have offices around the world through NYC and Company. It's private money as well as public money. But we should be in this time doubling and tripling our advertising budget. We've got to get tourists coming here. And you only do that by advertising. You know, it's funny, companies that try to improve this situation by cutting back, my experience is that's not the right thing to do. You should spend more, do it intelligently, but you've got to invest in new products and advertise and hire new people with ideas and whatever. And that's, I think, why my company's been successful. That's why I think New York City's been successful. So he's right. There are some things, but they tend to be small things, and you can't have just a world where only the basic necessities. But if you did that, we'd spend 100% of our 100% of our tax dollars on, let's say, police and fire. And maybe then you'd say, oh, what about education? Then what about corrections? Then what about sanitation? Then what about seniors programs? I instantly, you've just got to the point where you've got 85, 90% of the money. So we do need parks. And we do need to have people, I'll give you a good example. In Times Square on New Year's Eve, there'll be, I don't know how many, we say millions of people, okay? It's great, it's exciting and that sort of thing. You could do without it. We don't have to do that.
I'm assuming there's overtime for the police and sanitation,
sure, a lot.
Certainly.
Right, absolutely, okay? And this is a little bit of private money, but fundamentally it's public money. You could say that that's one of those things we really don't need, except that would be one of the dumber decisions ever. We are the standard for the world for New Year's Eve. We advertise this is the greatest place to come. And what's more, it's good for the spirit of the people that live in New York. So, you know, I don't know about the footbridge over the Hudson River at Poughkeepsie. It may be an old bridge that they just fixed up. I don't know that they. I don't think they built a footbridge. Maybe they did. I don't think so, though.
No.
My guess would be it's an old bridge. We have one of those on the East River that we're redoing. The Parks Department's rebuilding. Where you go from
Not Roosevelt, but Randall's.
No. This is a bridge over. It's an old. It carried the aqueduct over in the olden days, and it's. I've walked over it. It's really spectacular. Yeah, it's a small amount of money. It's another park. You have to have these things. We have to support our cultural institutions. Could you live without it? Short term, you can live without it. Long term, you don't have a future. Cultural institutions bring an enormous amount of our tax base here.
I understand you were on The View yesterday. I don't see any black and blue marks or anything like that.
And on the subway, I was up after that at Harlem Armory and took the subway downtown, and this woman gets on and says, I saw you this morning on The View. I said, thank you very much. Now, I told Barbara Walters that.
I understand they asked you about Caroline Kennedy and this whole appointment. Yes. You said that there should be a different, or you thought, in your view, there should be a different process.
There's about 17 states, I think, that they elect, and the balance where the governor appoints, and maybe I got it reversed, something like that. I think actually you could have a 2-month period, and maybe the governor has a right to appoint somebody for 2 months, but that person can't run, because you really, whoever the governor appoints gets an enormous advantage in the next election. And you could argue that it's not shouldn't be in one person's hands, that it would be more democratic. Having said that, this is the law here. The governor has to come up with somebody. He's got an array of choices. I was asked about Caroline Kennedy. She's worked very hard for the city in raising money and is a neighbor around the corner, lives around the corner. She's, you know, a phenomenally qualified person. The governor, incidentally, has some others that he can pick from as well.
Yes, he does.
And it's not up to me. And I've never talked to him. I'm not going to tell him who to pick or ask him who to pick, or he's not asking me who he should pick. You know, whoever it is, I just hope that they are hardworking and honest and listen to their staff. One of the things they want with these candidates for Senate is, you know, what's your policy on A, B, and C? Those are ridiculous questions, because in the end, their policies will be formed partly by the other senators that they have to work with, partly by what their staffs tell them after doing research. There's a gut feeling. You want to know a person is caring and smart and honest and intellectually open to new ideas. That is legit. And, you know, you can say, look, what's your policy on immigration? But unless you really study immigration, you can't have a well-thought-out policy.
And you don't know what it would be in the context of what was happening around you, as you just pointed out.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, Mr. Mayor, we've got some folks on the phones here that would like to ask some questions. We will get into that in just a moment, 800-321-0710. Let me take a break. Coming right back.
The John Gambling Show.
All right, Mr. Mayor, 5 minutes before 9 o'clock, and we've got some folks on the line here that would like to ask you some questions. What do you say we start with Tom in Queens? Tom, go ahead. Good morning.
Oh, good morning, Mr. Mayor.
Good morning.
Mr. Gambling, happy holidays.
Thank you very much. What's the question?
Yeah, just for the record, since I have to admit I never heard an answer to this question, I was just wondering, Mr. Mayor, how much did your non-traditional relationship with Ms. Taylor have a bearing on your decision not to run for president? And if so, was it because of her wishes or yours?
You know, it's nice of you to call. Thank you very much.
There you go. Thanks a lot. We appreciate that, asking or telling us you were going to ask a different question and going there. Let's move along to number four, and that's Barbara out in Queens. Hello, Barbara. Good morning.
Yes, hi. Good morning, John, Mr. Mayor. Hi, I'm with the school system, and my question is, if you're cutting the new class coming in for the police and you're cutting the new class for the firemen, what are you doing about the new class for the Leadership Academy for principals?
We will have fewer people coming into every part of every service. Now, there's somewhere you can't get lower than a minimum number by law. There's somewhere you can't get lower because you get down to one person and you have to have that service. But we have reduced the administrators in the Department of Education dramatically. This last cut is 350-odd administrators. At some point, Barbara, we have a $20 billion organization, the Department of Education. You have to have management. Every school has to have principals, and we're not going to have more than one principal. The number of principals is fundamentally just fixed by the number of schools. We have taken some big schools and split them up into small schools in the same building. So it is true you'd have a few more principals, one for each. The big problem we're going to have is that at this point, you're going to have to go into the classroom. There is nothing left of any magnitude. And if the governor's budget cuts $600 million out of our educational system, that's going to come out of the classroom. If Joel Klein has been very inventive in terms of finding ways to protect the classroom while reducing expenses, but when we don't have any money, we don't have any money.
Class size if you have fewer teachers, I would think
you'd have bigger class
size.
Absolutely. We have been reducing class sizes and working hard. Keep in mind that the most important thing in education is the quality of your teachers. And what we have done over the last 7 years is we have raised teachers' salaries dramatically. I think it was 43%. So that teachers in New York City are now paid as well as teachers in the suburbs. And teachers from around the country want to come here. We have 50-odd thousand applicants every year for 5,000 slots. And that was not 7 years ago. We couldn't fill the 12,000 that were resigning, retiring. So, Barbara, I think the answer is it's that unfortunately, and we're going to try as hard as we can to not get there, but if we get cut from the governor's budget, and if we get, which in the end is the legislature that's going to have to pass that budget, and if we have less tax revenues, that's dependent on the economy, everybody's going to suffer. No good choices.
All right, let's go to Janet out in Sunnyside. Hi, Janet. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call, Mr. Mayor. I wanted you to comment about the planned elimination of funding for the adult services for seniors with Alzheimer's and dementia. My mother was a recipient of that program for about 2 years.
Yeah, you know, I have somebody I used to be friendly with. I worked with him. I weren't that close. But his wife has written me a number of letters about that in the last 2 weeks, and I'm looking into it. I just don't know. You know, we're going to try, Janet, to keep as many of these things going as we can. But once again, you know, you just can't do everything.
Tough call.
But this one, I'm familiar with the extent that I have asked, and I'm waiting for a report on what it is. I think it's probably the same program. People with dementia really do need help. And it's a lot of people in this city. Special ed kids need help. And we're going to have to find ways to not walk away from our responsibility to pay for the essential services. But, you know, we get back to... In this city, the average class size is 23, but if you divide the number of teachers into the number of students, you'd think it's 13. And the reason is special ed kids fundamentally get a teacher per student.
Per student, exactly.
And that's some of it's because we want to do it, some of it's because the courts say you have to do it, but those kids really do need help.
All right, Mr. Mayor, our time is up. Unfortunately, with the holidays up, we will get together after the new year.
Looking forward to it, but how are you going to go for a couple weeks without this?
Well, I'll be lonely, I guess, on Friday mornings. Have yourself a
happy
wonderful...
Happy holidays to everybody.
Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, and a Happy New Year.
Thank you to everybody, too.
All right, Mayor Michael Bloomberg here. We got to go.